It's time for you to define your brand. This podcast is designed to arm you with the tools and confidence needed to build a standout brand in today's marketplace. I'm your host, Matt Crane, and I'm honored to be joined by my co-host and CEO of Rush Impact Marketing and Rush Impact Media, Jeremy Warner.
Matt, it's awesome to be here, and I'm excited to share and engage with our audience, listeners, and special guests that will be joining the show. Most importantly, I'm excited to help all of you take charge of your brand. Matt, you know what we say around here, your brand, your responsibility.
Investing in my digital first impression changed my personal brand, my business, and my future. I'm gonna do the same for you.
This week on Define Your Brand, millennial live streaming influencer, keynote speaker, and community brand builder, Brian Fanzo joins hosts Matt Crane and Jeremy Warner to discuss how he built his brand through live streaming and how he channeled his ADHD to help him win big online.
And beyond that, I'm going to help you increase your digital productivity, helping you maximize the time you have spent online, giving you value both online and offline.
Let's all welcome Brian Fanzo to the Define Your Brand podcast show.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are back right here on the Define Your Brand podcast show. And I got to tell you, this week, we got a very energetic, very exciting, heavy hitter, pager wearing millennial joining us this week on the show. And, you know, honestly, he's one of my favorite guys online, somebody that I really, really, really connected with very early on. You know, Brian, Fanzo. You know, man, you have really made quite an impression on me, and it's really great to welcome you to the Define Your Brand podcast show. I've had the opportunity of interviewing you on other podcasts, but engaging with you on social media, and I've truly been a fan of yours for some time, and I'm really excited this week for our audience to learn more from you on how to build their communities online and truly think like a fan.
Thanks for having me. I told you on the last time I talked with you, Matt, that there's not very many shows where the guest is more passionate and more into it than I am. I get to walk in, the bar is usually low, but you guys are bringing it. So I'm ready to bring it today. And, I do talk fast. So the caveat usually is for most people, if you speed up your podcast normally, listen to this one on regular speed or you'll have a little bit of trouble at 1.5x.
Well, we love it. We know you're going to bring it. And Brian, I'm excited to have you on the show and learn from you as well about how to build a strong community online and how you are able to truly leverage live streaming to break into the noisy digital space. So for our listening audience out there that may know you or hasn't had the opportunity to hear you, walk us through a little bit of your early pager wearing millennial days.
Sure. No, so I appreciate that. And the nice caveat is, live streaming kind of fell in my lap, but I have no formal video training. My video prior to Meerkat coming out at South by Southwest was probably like 6 YouTube videos total on the internet from me. I have a weird background. I introduced myself on stage as a change evangelist. And really what that means is not only have I had lots of change in my background, but I've found my niche is helping brands, entrepreneurs, leaders embrace change. And it's usually what I like to say, translating the geek speak. And the credibility on the backside for me is I spent 9 years for the Department of Defense deploying and managing cybersecurity solutions and leveraging collaboration between different military groups. So I did 3 trips to Iraq, 2 to Afghanistan, a little over 30 total to the Middle East. And what I really figured out was I'm not a super geek. I have a computer science major, but I also love the business side. So I kind of made my own kind of middle ground where I can relate with the developers and understand what they're doing, go talk to the brass or that side. And I worked at a big enterprise company. I loved my job. Ended up taking the leap out of cyber because as you kind of said in the intro, I'm a passionate guy. I love life. I love waking up. I love going to bed. But in cyber, you're kind of like the war on drugs. If you do something good, nobody notices. If you do something bad, a drone fell out of the sky, or you know, you're putting someone in danger. And so I pivoted out. I gave, you know, cyber is an amazing space, and I still do a lot in that space as far as some consulting and things on the backside. But I went to a data center company, which if you had to pick the like least sexiest technology industry today, it probably is a data center environment. But what I really was trying to do is I wanted to kind of prove this idea where I didn't go to school for marketing or social media or community, but I believe I was pretty much schooled in YouTube University, where you know you learn from everything you read, everything you watch, all the people you're talking with. And so, I mean, hearing you guys saying that you guys are learning from me, that like melts my heart, because that's kind of how I've kind of sustained my growth since kind of getting out of college. Because college for me was, I played hockey. I was the captain of the fraternity. I was captain of the hockey team, and I was president of the fraternity. And so college was like it was a great experience. I never will say that I will regret going for the 4 years. I probably do regret not going to many classes, and I probably should have done a little bit more in that arena. But kind of fast forward how this all worked is, you know, I had years upon years of everybody kind of telling me, Brian, jump into entrepreneurship, you know, what are you doing? You know, get out of the startup. But I have a unique world where I loved my enterprise job, and I pivoted because I wanted to make a bigger difference. I went into a startup. We grew so fast, and I was in charge of internal communications. We went from 256 employees to 614 in 2 years, and it was great. It was an amazing team. So I loved my startup life, and I decided I kind of got a little help of a push, and what I was doing was I had created my dream job. My dream job was a technology evangelist modeled after Guy Kawasaki and Robert Scoble. And those were two guys that I looked up to. And I ended up getting in that startup, being able to create that dream job. I was the face of the company. I got to work with the employees, the partners, the customers, with no KPIs, no sales, no marketing. My job was really cut through the noise, help these teams collaborate, you know, really build a community. I always say, anytime I hear the word community and you're talking about business, you have to picture internal, which means your employees, as well as external. I think for some reason we always picture the external side and we forget kind of our biggest ambassadors. But I jumped into the entrepreneur side, and I will say, of the three arenas, the enterprise, the startup, entrepreneurship has been the hardest for me, without question. I've had the most roller coaster of ups and downs while kind of, you know, learning as I go. And I'm still, you know, I pivoted my business this year, really focusing on how do I make the biggest amount of change, but also scale. And, you know, I'm influenced by a lot of the people that you guys have had as guests. I've been very blessed to have a, you know, strong relationship with Gary Vee and a couple of these guys but I also have different goals in mind and different visions of success. I have three young daughters, a 7-year-old, one that turns 6 tomorrow, and a 3-year-old. And my ideal world is, you know, building a business that is allowed to scale where I can travel the world with my girls. And so right now I focus on really connecting the dots for brands. I build influencer strategies. I become an influencer myself. And then mostly it's speaking. So I did 50 events last year in 11 countries, speaking on everything from change to live video to digital storytelling, to my newest focus, which, you know, is the Think Like a Fan, as well as this millennial mindset, because my first book will be out this fall and it'll be called A Millennial Mindset. So as you can see, lots of change, lots of crazy kind of chaos in my environment. But the one thing that's kind of hung true is that I love connecting great people with great people to do great things. And that's where I kind of have kept my swim lane. So I'm glad you have me on. I'm excited to share that with your audience. I love the flow of your show. I love what you guys are bringing. So it's I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's also an honor to have you here as well, because a lot of our audience and listeners out there, there's going to be those that have delved into live streaming, but there's a lot that still haven't embraced it. And, you know, what you kind of, you know, led off the show with was you didn't have any training. And I think that was so very important. So I really want our listeners to understand that is no training is necessary in the world of live video, because people want that authentic, you know, they want to see that authenticity. So, you know, Brian, you really hit home on a lot of things there, but I really kind of want you to dive a little deeper into something you talked about, which was entrepreneurship. So for you, What was the real switch that went off that you said, I've got to jump headfirst into entrepreneurship and use live streaming as that vehicle?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I love that you brought that in the live video, because, you know, I think for the longest time, the last 9 years or so, we've been using our digital technologies to distance ourselves from the customer, the community. You know, we built a website, we're putting all of these things, and it made sense, right? We were leveraging this digital platform to do things at scale that we couldn't do offline, right? And that's kind of where digital was really providing value. The problem became now is that our consumers are more empowered than they've ever been before. And not only more empowered, more distracted, have more opportunities of content consumption. I mean, it's almost laughable that a lot of people today forget that we used to have to watch commercials and you couldn't record your favorite TV show. Now we have on demand and Netflix. And so there's all of this distraction, all of these things. And so I think in today's world, you have to find not only how to cut through the noise, but how do you fit to where you can tell your story where you're most comfortable, right? I always try to stress for people, it's if you don't like video, don't do video. Find out, you know, start where you first feel the most comfortable and then start stretching it out to where your audience is, right? And I think a lot of times we start the other way. And if you start the other way, the first thing you do is you put barriers in place that make you say, oh, I'm not going to do that because, you know, my hair is not right or the lighting is not right or I don't know the technology. But if you start out where you're most comfortable, you have the most chance of success, the least chance of putting these barriers in. And live video to me, if you would have asked me 3 years ago, would I ever go live on live video? I would have laughed. Like it would have been, but I was, the way it kind of worked, and this is a good story into the entrepreneur side of it, is I was in Mobile World Congress, Barcelona, the week before South by Southwest. And I got a text from a friend that works at Twitter, and he just said, hey, Brian, there's this cool app. Gary Vaynerchuk and Ashton Kutcher are using it, and you can download it on your phone. You can go live. You should check it out. And I was there working with Dell and creating some video content at this big event, and I had just done a video. Right? I mean, within 5 minutes when I got this text. So I downloaded the app, and I didn't even put a title in there, which I think we all have learned. Everybody's first live stream is usually a picture of your feet and no title because you didn't know you should type in a title and you didn't know the back camera was the first one on. So then it's your feet and it's posted out there like untitled. But mine was no different. And I went live and immediately, so he's now famous because I talk about him all the time. But Gary from Indiana was my one and only viewer that jumped in on Meerkat. And I walked about 5 feet and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. The video's nice. And he said, hey, Brian, is that the Samsung booth over there? Can you show me that booth? And that's when the light bulb went off for me, because I had just created hours of video content on what Brian Fanzo wanted to share. All of a sudden, this live video was I call it participatory content. The people that I want to reach now have a chance to shape my content. And that was like mind blowing. And sadly, the story doesn't have too big of a happy ending because I walked about 2 more feet, the Wi-Fi dropped, and that was the end of my very first Meerkat. But if I look at what live streaming has meant to me as an entrepreneur, you know, I think entrepreneurs have the greatest advantage when it comes to personal branding and digital, because you're not an entrepreneur if you don't love what you do. You're not passionate. I mean, every entrepreneur is passionate. Every entrepreneur is dialed in. You know, we don't go through the ups and downs of feeling like you're going to throw up one day and then you're the king of the mountain the next day. Like that's this journey. And that's really hard for a lot of other people to convey, right? But the hard part ends up being, how do I stand out? And how do I truly tell the why and the how in a way that doesn't make me feel like it's marketing or sales? Because entrepreneurs, we want to do what we want to be an entrepreneur for. We didn't get into entrepreneurship to do all of the rest of the business side of the house. And so live video, it allowed me to be me. It allowed me to be okay failing, be okay stuttering, talking fast, you know, and because of that, I was able to scale my storytelling at a rate I would have never dreamed of. And I mean, and to put it in perspective, in November of 2013, I started really telling my story, and I had 2,000 followers on Twitter, struggling to get a lot of the speaking gigs at big events. I now have over 100,000 followers on Twitter, almost 300,000 total on social media, and I'm speaking at all the world's largest events. And a lot of that had to do with not me conveying something differently online. I simply found a vehicle that allowed me to tell my story in the most comfortable way for me. And I've done almost 1,800 live videos myself personally since the days of South By. I don't do as many now on a regular basis. I was doing almost daily back when it first came. But it really is, and to kind of wrap this into the start of this, if you want to shrink the distance between the brand, the entrepreneur, and the community, right now, if you put up a website, I like to say the field of dreams is broken, which means if you build it, they will come. That's no longer the case. If you build it, no one's even going to know it's there. We're distracted. We have Snapchat and all these things going on, right? I think the new place is how do I convey my message where my audience is? And so then they come to me wanting to kind of learn more. And I think video and live video more so really shrink that distance, because the most powerful phrase you can say on live video is "I don't know." And Matt, you and I connected, I remember really early on, because I loved your, you know, you put the camera right in front of you. You were, you know, kind of doing your own rant, your own preaching. And then as you were getting comments and questions, you would inspire and motivate, but you were also not afraid to be like, well, that's not my wheelhouse. And I'm staying, you know, and there's an element of that when you're moving into this arena that I'm working with brands now to create "I don't know" pages on their website. Because when you can admit "I don't know," when you actually do know something, it actually adds validity, because we don't believe that anyone knows everything. We don't believe anybody's perfect. But for the weirdest thing, we try to convey that everywhere and anywhere. And I'm excited. I think we're moving into a new digital world that will be full of more transparency, more of us embracing our vulnerabilities, and true authenticity. And the goal of that is, if you are a good person doing good things and you have a good business and a good story, you are going to stand out. And the noise and the bad and the fluff and the fake it till I make it crowd, guess what? Their expiration date is 2017. And I'm excited to see that, because for too long, it's a frustrating entrepreneur journey when the fake it to make it world is not what we like, but they're still being successful. And it's like, how do I continue to inspire when the people that are doing it wrong are still making it? And thankfully, I think we've got to a world now where people want that authenticity. They want that trust. And if you're not telling your story, and if you're not saying "I don't know," and you're not putting yourself out there, you're simply going to become the exhaust to all of us that are doing it.
Boom.
That was powerful.
I was fired up. Yeah, you got me fired up to start it off. You guys did a good job. You got me fired up.
I love it. That's what we want.
Well, just, you know, to piggyback off of what you're talking about, how powerful, you know, video is. You know, we tell our clients and we tell everybody this all the time, but, you know, 1 minute of video is as powerful as 1.8 million words. And to be able to share that story, you know, with your audience, and they can see your true passion in it, they can see your energy in it, they can feel all that, that becomes very, very contagious. You know, I didn't have the opportunity in you know, my live streaming era to be on Meerkat. But, you know, the thing where I found Brian was on Snapchat, you know, with all the Bitmojis, he had the lenses, and, you know, I was following, wherever he went, you know, he showcased it on Snapchat. So that was just a different vehicle where you were sharing content that was different than what Meerkat was, and it was still engaging. It was still very engaging. But, you know, Brian, you were an early adapter of Meerkat. What did the demise of that platform teach you about live streaming platforms that truly list that don't truly listen to their users?
No, I think this is the interesting part, right? We've kind of lived in this world where we broadcast at, we market at, we sales towards, right? And I question everyone on your listeners, who likes to be marketed to? Who likes to be sold to? Even who likes to be influenced? Like, the whole word influence is kind of creepy, right? Like, it's like almost like, wait, you're like kind of like mind gaming, you know, manipulating me. And so it's always been a business is great because they have great employees, not they have great products, right? They create great experiences. We don't buy the new iPhone anymore because we need another iPhone. We buy it because, like, for me, the iPhone 7, it has portrait mode and it helps with, you know, the pictures of my daughters is amazing. It has zero to do with the product, right? I mean, Apple doesn't even have their iPhone in their commercials anymore, right? It's all about the pictures and the experience. But the weird part of marketing and sales, especially in a digital space, is because we became automated, we became so disconnected. I like to tell this for you, it's not that we were doing it wrong all of these years. We just need to change how we're doing it moving forward, right? And it's almost this idea where we don't trust a logo, and our loyalty is built based on the experience someone is enabling, as well as our ability to relate with that business, right? Like, and this is something that I've kind of preaching as part of my book now is, you know, we've always heard that people buy from who they like, right? And then they don't buy from who they don't like. But for the longest time, if you had a lukewarm relationship with somebody, that's also someone you would buy from, right? In the sales space. I actually now believe you'll buy from people you like, but you'll also buy from people that you can relate to. And to me, that, how do you relate with somebody, right? I have a cell phone. I actually have three cell phones, right? And I have had AT&T for 9 years. And because I do live streaming, I wanted to get one on different arenas. And it was interesting for me because Jean Legere, the CEO of T-Mobile, is extremely active on social, extremely engaged, and really open. And when I was thinking about my carrier and what my decision was, I was like, you know what? I'm going with T-Mobile because I know this person's dialed it in. I know he cares about the community. And the interesting thing was I've been a customer of AT&T for 9 years, and I couldn't tell you if the CEO was female or male, right? And I made a decision, not because AT&T didn't, I still have an AT&T service and I loved my service. They were the original iPhone, but it changed for me so much so in the sense where I want that connection. If you want advocacy, you want influencer, you have to bring me along on the journey. That's why live video is so contagious, because even you know, regular video, I think video is so amazing as a whole, but when you add live to it, it allows people to participate in what you're doing. And think about that. I mean, I remember wanting to grow up, I wanted to be a Sports Center anchor. I wanted to be on ESPN. I'm a diehard Pittsburgh sports fan. I mean, I love that. And that's always what I wanted to do. And a year ago, one of the guys on ESPN, Flores, was live streaming. And I started asking him questions. We had a dialogue for almost 10 minutes. When I met him for the first time earlier this year at a Live Fronts event, he came over and gave me a hug. And this was an environment and a space that I pretty much had given up on because I went into computer science. I did my background. But live video, it shrunk that barrier. It shrunk that distance between me and that environment. And I can tell you, in this world now where we have plenty of options, plenty of distractions, I like to say what my goal is oftentimes with live video is I become an attention hacker. I want to hack the audience's attention, because even though I can watch the NFL football on my TV or I can watch it in the Twitter feed, is there an opportunity to engage with the world while I'm watching it? And it might sound crazy, especially to the older generation, but let's face it, part of what, you know, and I do a lot with millennials and Gen Z. And one of the frustrations for a lot of these, you know, generation now is when you're looking at your phone or you have your phone out and you're immediately thought as not being social. But for them, they're documenting and sharing that journey with millions of people, not only the four at the table. And like what you said about my Snapchat, right? Snapchat became what I like to call group therapy. I cried on Snapchat when I got kicked in the stomach, when I lost this giant contract that I worked on for 3 months. I bring people along. And to me, it's amazing when you drop that barrier and you're just human. I mean, the amount of people that can relate. We don't even have to be in the same industry, the same walk of life. There's a gentleman named Brian Ring who owns a lawnmower company in Minnesota. And we connected via Snapchat, and he was trying to grow his lawnmower company. And I'm in high-end tech. And the crazy part was we connected, besides having the same first name, we kind of connected on this ability that said, hey, we care about the people around us and educating, but we just want to reach more people. And I mean, I say it all the time. I believe, you know, raising three daughters that are under seven, I believe we're living in the greatest time, because I grew up in Pittsburgh and my access to other cultures, other people was literally a vacation to the Jersey Shore or maybe one to Virginia. Some of my family in Pittsburgh have never left the city. And now my daughter does Skypes with one of my clients that's in Australia with her daughter, right? And like you have this ability to be connected as well as working and learning from people, no matter what their background is, no matter what their resume is, no matter what their walk of life is. And I tell you what, it's an exciting time to raise kids. It's an exciting time to live in. And for me, it's so much of this future of, hey, how do we shrink this barrier and become more authentic in everything we do, not just digital, not just offline?
Absolutely. Well, hey, everyone out there right now, you're listening on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, Pandora. For those of you that are with us on Facebook Live, the comments are going crazy, and they should. But my man Brian Fanzo is also doing something pretty special for everyone that's going to be listening to these podcasts. And I'm really excited that he brought this to our attention. But the folks over at Iographer are going to be giving away two of their brand new iPhone cases for the 6S, 6 Plus, and 7 Plus. And here's all you got to do. You simply want to share out this Facebook live stream. You want to like the Find Your Brand podcast page. And then I want you to get over to facebook.com/iSocialFans. The link will be in the comments below. And I want you to like my man, Brian Fanzo's page. And we're going to give one lucky winner one of these exclusive cases from Iographer. And you can see Brian right there on our video showing it to you guys. And then when you get over to iTunes, the Define Your Brand podcast on iTunes, for everyone that leaves a review and likes the Define Your Brand podcast on iTunes, we're going to do a second giveaway. So I want to thank the folks over there at Iographer and Brian for allowing us to do that. But, you know, Brian, now that you're an expert, okay, and I can honestly say that about you, and you can obviously say that about yourself. There's a war going on right now in social media with Instagram and Snapchat. And not a lot of people are saying it's a war, but it's a war. And what do you really see happening inside of that war? And how can brands truly, I mean truly, leverage both platforms?
So first lesson is don't mess with Zuck. You know, you turn down Zuckerberg for billions of dollars. All he does is just turn the dial, right? And he's, I'm a big fan of both Evan and Zuck. And, you know, I think it's an interesting game. I think in this world we're living in, I mean, if you have to think of it, everyone's on Facebook, right? Facebook is that unique, you know, it's almost like the internet. You know, it's one of those things. If you have an email address, more than likely you have a Facebook account, even if you're not pro Facebook. But in this world, in this space, especially in social media, in these digital channels, what we really need to start looking at and start focusing on is what's the best type of content and who is the audience that I'm trying to reach, right? I've been building Snapchat influencer campaigns to reach audiences that are not on Snapchat, which might like be confusing right now, but let me explain, because one of the things that's really weird is that we've always thought about only targeting the person that is actually wearing our product or swiping the credit card or making the final purchase. But ultimately, if we can get the person that is influencing them on what they're actually buying, isn't that even more powerful, right? And so when you're working with brands that have, you know, hey, my product's only for 35 to 45 year olds, right? But and one of the companies is a jean company, right? And they're skinny jeans for moms between 35 and 45. And what they found was the number one influencer for that demographic in jeans is actually teenage daughters and the kids that are in the mall, because they want to wear the hippest, the latest style. Well, guess who's on Snapchat? Guess who's using that? You know, and so we built a campaign around, you know, Pretty Little Liars, the TV show, and it was sponsored by this brand, and pretty much put that brand's name in this demographic. That was when their mom or their aunt asked them, "Man, have you heard of these jeans?" "Oh, of course I have." Like, you know, it's one of those interesting spaces. And so I think Zuckerberg's genius for looking at Snapchat invented this idea that said we need to tell stories in chronological order that invoke FOMO, which I host the FOMO Fans podcast, so I appreciate the FOMO aspect. So it invokes the fear of missing out, because in 24 hours, the content disappears, so it requires you to come back. But they also did it was really what they allow us to do is video blog our life with jump cuts without having to do anything other than take our finger off the button, right? Like, you know, like I'll do a document throughout my day and I use the spectacles. I did it last night at my daughter's soccer game. And for me, it's how do I bring you on my journey and be able to document my thing without having it extra work, right? I've never done a vlog series because that's too much work for me. I talked about it earlier, right? I added barriers. I have to edit. I have to do show notes. I have to upload to YouTube. I have to SEO my YouTube. Well, on Snapchat, I can kind of create and document the story as it's happening in the right chronological order. And I think that to me is one of the coolest aspects without question. So to answer your question, when I look at these two platforms, Snapchat and Instagram, there's always going to be a platform that the kids want to be where their parents aren't, right? And I love Gary Vee's line of, you know, marketers ruin every platform. And Instagram, more so than anywhere else, has done an amazing job of preventing marketers from ruining it, right? Let's face it. The ads are pretty good. You only get one link out in your bio. You have to change that as you go. And so what Instagram has created is really a fun environment that has a wide mix of audiences on there, right? But the content is check it a couple times, you swipe up and down, and if something's a thumb-stopping content, right, if something's worth stopping, you look at it, you double tap a heart, maybe comment, but that consumption is definitely different than the consumption of a Snapchat viewer, right? Where a Snapchat viewer might only tune in once a day, where that's kind of the consumption I'm doing on Snapchat today. I know it expires 24 hours a day, right? So if I get in once a day and watch all the people's content that I want, I get to see that 23 hours and 59 minutes worth of content. So I tell everybody, every strategy we build out, this is the key part. If you start out your strategy deciding, do I want to use Snapchat or Instagram, you've already failed. You must start out and say, what does success look like? What do I want to accomplish? And who is the audience that I want to reach? When you start with defining success and understanding the audience you want to reach, you then backwards into strategy, which then leads you to the correct platform. Starting with a platform is almost like pigeonholing and siloing your possibility of success. And the other piece of this is don't ignore the concept of, I like to call it upcycling of content, right? So recycling of content just means we take all the stuff and we push it out the same place everywhere. But why not take one great piece of content and shape it and customize it and tweak it for each individual platform? Because if the audiences are slightly different, then the audience consumption is going to be slightly different. And I think we're going to get into this space where storytelling is only going to become more important. The documenting of our journey in a storytelling format is going to be valuable. But I think Zuckerberg's going to do amazing things in VR, AR, 360. We're really going to see a redefinition there. I do have faith in Evan and Snapchat. I believe there is no better social platform today that understands their users than Snapchat. I think Snapchat has it down to a science on that. And so if we look at that big picture, we look at what's going on in the future, don't be surprised if Snapchat, all of a sudden, some of the marketers go back there. But I almost think Snapchat now, today, is still such a powerful play because I talked about attention hacking, right? The attention's there. And Instagram Stories is an amazing platform because you can create a story that links to a picture that might send people to a link, right? And so we're kind of doing these things all in kind of full cycle. And so every time, and this sounds very programmatic, but I'll kind of wrap up this on this, is every time I go to tell my story and I grab my phone, I think two things. What is the story I want to convey? And who is it that I'm hoping to reach? That actually determines if I open Snapchat or Instagram, or even sometimes open Snapchat, create it, save to my camera roll, and upload it to Instagram. Because there is that aspect now of I want to reach people where they want to be, not make them come to me. And I love it. I think this idea of storytelling and doing it in ways, I mean, if you have to say anything, the Zuckerberg versus Snapchat, you can call it war, the number one person that benefits is all of us, the consumer, the user, because they're pushing the boundaries. I mean, we wouldn't have got the features in Periscope if it wasn't for Facebook Live. If Facebook Live did not push forward, it really lit a fire under Periscope's development team. And I think this is the fun part. We have to look at this both from a consumer and a marketer and say, how do I really do some cool things in this space and reach the right audience?
Love that, man. Great content, and thank you for sharing that with us. And, you know, as always, I knew you were going to be able to break it down into layman's terms for us. And, man, that was tough.
Yeah, one thing for me that I love that you talked about was speed. And one thing that Snapchat and Instagram allows you to do, just like you said, is there's not a lot of production that goes in and a lot of editing and different things like that. So it allows you to create content, push it out to the world very, very quickly. You know, I got into the Snapchat world, you know, obviously owning a media company when the geofilters first came out. And I leveraged Snapchat and I used the geofilter, you know, the creation of it to be able to reach out and connect with Grant Cardone, DJ Khaled. I did a geofilter for Antonio Brown. So I had these situations and opportunities, you know, through Snapchat to be able to do some biz dev. And then same thing with Instagram, you know, it allows you to do direct messaging where you can share some values, share some content through Instagram stories and then be able to provide a ton of value. So, you know, I love both platforms, what they bring to the table, you know, the direction they're going and, you know, exactly what you said. If you're not leveraging both of them and using it the right way, you know, that's going to bring and get you attention. then you're definitely missing the boat. So, Brian, we greatly, greatly appreciate you sharing all that content with us. But switching gears here a little bit as we wrap up the show, you've been very, very outspoken about how you use your ADD to your benefit. Despite being told it was a problem, how can others truly leverage their unique abilities online to build a standout brand?
So I think, you know, one of the things that's really interesting in this in this arena is that, you know, that we really want to find a way to not only be ourselves, but like being yourself is not about something you do, right? It ends up, you know, I have tattoos, I have daughters, I wear a backwards hat most of the time. And ADHD became my superpower, and it's much like why I my book's The Millennial Mindset, is why I talk, because it's part of who I am. It's not who I am. It doesn't define me. But if I'm not willing to share my vulnerabilities as well as the other side of the house, like it really forces you to prevent yourself from telling your entire story, right? And I was diagnosed at 31 years old, ADHD, and I remember it was as if someone just patted me on the back and said, "Brian, it's okay. All of those days where you fell asleep in high school classes and you struggled through college and you've read 3 books in your first 30 years. I mean, I've read more books in 4 years than I did my first 31 years of my life, right? Like if you look at it that way, right? There's this whole different aspect. And so I tell people here's it's about risk first reward. So I don't tell every, you know, there's a difference between transparency and oversharing. Oversharing is, hey, I'm going to the bathroom, this is what I'm eating. Transparency it's giving people an authentic window into seeing who you are. Now, the interesting thing about that is I always tell everybody, be yourself, right? I have an online course called it. That's my secret to success. And the crazy part about this entire piece and the way this is working is that if you're going to be yourself online, you can't suck, right? And I tell people, if you suck offline, pick somebody else to be online, right? Let's get that straight, because transparency just gives people an authentic window into who you are. And if you are not a good person, if you all of a sudden they're going to realize that quicker, and it's going to be harder to hide. But the exciting part is when you're being your, I mean, the amount of people that have connected with me and said, "Brian, I started following you because you were sharing pictures of your daughters and your love for Pittsburgh sports. Then I realized I needed someone to do influencer marketing for me." And all of a sudden it was like, wait a second, my gateway to that was me sharing my favorite job in the world, which is being a dad. And I think this is weird. This is a world where we used to have 2 Twitter accounts, right? You know, personal and business. We used to think of all. I even had a BlackBerry for work and an iPhone for personal. And now we're moving to this thing is we do business with people. We want to get to know people, and it is really hard. If you are struggling with social media or digital or video today, I can guarantee one thing: more than likely, when you're building out what you're going to create, you're thinking, what does the audience want? What should I share for the audience? What does the audience want? And you need to change that. And it says, how do I tell my story? How do I share my why, my how, what I'm doing, and allow people to relate? Because social media is, I hated social media the first 2 years that I was really getting into it, because I had to think about what I was going to post and how I was going to post it and what did people want. And it was so not me, and it was so much work. Like you said about Snapchat, I mean, let's face it, the barrier to entry is very simple. You hold your finger on a button. Like, they made it literally keep it simple, stupid. But part of the cool creative part is people ask me all the time, "Brian, how do you tweet that much? How do you document all those things?" And I'm like, it's such a part of my workflow and my daily storytelling that I don't even think about. I couldn't even tell you how many Instagram or stories or Snapchat stories I've posted today, you know, at whatever time it is. But yet I've documented my day in both of those, right? Because it's integrated into who I am, and I'm able to reach. I might be an entrepreneur working, a solopreneur right now, working by myself in my home office, and yet I've connected, collaborated, and told a story with a couple 100,000 people today. And how cool is that? We live in a world that we're able to kind of do that. And for me, ADHD was a blessing, because it made me realize that I wasn't broken. I just thought differently than other people. And even though, you know, I'm on Adderall, and Adderall has extremely helped, it wasn't the medicine. It was the pat on the back to say, hey, I've always prided myself on being different and unique, and this was just one more way for me to do it. And it's, you know, one of the things that was really scary was that for a lot of people, millennial was like a scarlet letter where they hated it because they were treated badly. And then ADHD was like they were afraid to tell people that they had that because they would get stereotyped. And for me, it's been amazing. The amount of people that either reach out and say, I have a son or a daughter, or – better yet, they go, Brian, I understand you better now. And how cool is that? By sharing something that was vulnerable for me has actually allowed people to better understand me. And I tell you what, it's a big part of my book. And when I started writing my book 3 years ago, it was no part of my book because I hadn't fully embraced it publicly like I do now. And I'm kind of thankful that it is because I talk fast. I have these vulnerabilities, but I do believe part of the creativity and standing out is if you want to relate with me, all you have to do is be human, be okay screwing up, be willing to kick the tires and see how things go. And that really opens the floodgates for everything that I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And really quickly too, I want to remind everyone, the great folks over at Iographer are doing an amazing giveaway, 2 iPhone cases for the 6S, 6 Plus, or 7 Plus. And here were the rules again. You got to get to iSocialFans, so facebook.com/iSocialFans. You got to like that page. And then we want you to share this Facebook live stream out and like it as well, because we want to give you something, but we got to show you're committed to take it from us. And that's your commitment.
Let me just jump in real quick because this is a pretty cool story. So Iographer, it's a case that I use. It straps on top of my tripod. It allows me to put a microphone on the top of it, but it clips your iPhone in it, right? So your iPhone almost has all of the attachments that traditional video camera would or camera would. But the story, you know, I get sent, I'm very blessed to be an influencer in the tech space, right? It's kind of a dream job. My daughters always laugh. Like, it's Christmas every time the UPS driver shows up because I get gear that is just, without me even having to ask for it, I get gear sent my way. And part of that, like every business, how do you stand out? You send me your gear. If it's not exactly what I want to be using, you're not going to stand out. And the interesting thing was Dave, the founder of Iographer, was following me on social, had kickstarted this company, was really excited about launching this product. And he knew at that moment, I had just talked about how much time I was spending on Snapchat and how much value I was having. And he snapped me from Hawaii. And he's like, hey man, I just want to connect. I bet your daughters would love this view by the pool. I'm on vacation in Hawaii. I love your content. And this is a guy that wanted to get on my radar. He could have just sent me gear. He could have sent me an email that I would never have read. And all of a sudden we started documenting and he's like, what case do you use? Why do you use that? Oh, by the way, I'm gonna send you some free cases. This is why I created it. This is my passion project. And immediately I was sold before I touched his product. Right. And the reason whenever he came to me and said, hey, Brian, I want to be a part of your podcast. I want you to give out these to your community is he cares about his company and his product. He got his story in front of me. He attention hacked me. Right. Like he literally brought his story and grabbed my attention. But he did it in a way that wasn't sales, that wasn't marketing, probably isn't in any startup book that you have a physical product. But the way that he did it has turned me being into an advocate at every event that I go to. Every time I live stream at Dell, IBM, Samsung, I live stream to the Super Bowl on that channel using his product. That all started with a simple Snapchat conversation because he came to where I was. And so that's part of the reason why for me, I'm an advocate because not only do I use the product, but you're doing it the right way. And I think, you know, more businesses, if you can have a product that's good and do it the right way, it's amazing combination. Of course, if your product sucks, doesn't really matter how good the front end is. I've had a couple of people duplicate that example because of me sharing that story. And unfortunately, like their broken product is over here on my desk because it wasn't something good. But I appreciate that. And I'm excited to get that in everybody's hands. And yeah, check out Iographer. There's so many cases, so many possibilities. For me, I like things that are simple that allow you to, you know, clip on lenses and do a couple of things. So thank you for letting me share that because it adds right into the story of, you know, how do you get on someone's radar? Dave proved it, and now we've had a partnership for a couple of years.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Well, once again, everyone, we want to say a huge thank you to my man, Brian, iSocialFans. You got to check him out online at iSocialFans. I want you to get over to facebook.com/iSocialFans, like his page, stay in front of this pager wearing millennial, because let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, this man is a lightning rod of authenticity, of engagement, but more importantly, he doesn't feel like he's satisfied doing his job online if he's not leaving you with real actionable takeaways that you can apply to your life and into your business and to help enhance the way you do business and you share your story online. So really want to say thank you again, Brian, for being on the show. It's a pleasure having you, buddy.
Well, thank you guys. And I tell you what, you know, I talk about doing it the right way. And right now I'm pivoting. I got more distractions in my world than I could ever imagine. And you know, I get lots of podcast inquiries as well. I've been a guest on 100 podcasts as of February, but both of you have always engaged, shared my content, had conversations with me. You have an open door to make that ask, and I'm going to make it happen as soon as I can. And I think it's a lesson for everybody, right? You have to be part of that person's community. You have to care about them before you want them to care about you. And I appreciate you guys doing that. And you know, great content, inspiring people. We need more people lifting people up, especially in this space, to kind of highlight the great things that are going on. So thanks so much for having me on. And make sure, you know, for the listeners, my podcast, FOMO Fans, you know, FOMO, FANZ or Z at the end. It's kind of my new passion project. I broadcast live on Facebook Live every Monday at 4 p.m., one of the episodes. And I talk about a wide range of things, but it's giving me an opportunity to reach a whole new audience and embracing the power of podcasting. And I tell you what, I love it. And if you want to have me on again in the future, please do. And I have a couple things in the works that I might have to have you guys on my side of the house. But thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Absolutely love it, man.
Cheers.